words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer.
Amen.
We are still in the midst of the great 50 days of Easter. The Easter season, and this is the sixth Sunday of Easter. This Sunday also has another, much less common, less well-known name, this Sunday which comes before Ascension Day. Ascension Day is this Thursday. It's always 40 days after Easter, always the Thursday after the sixth Sunday of Easter. But this Sunday and Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of this coming week go by another name. And just out of curiosity, not counting that small handful of people to whom I have spoken already, you don't get to pretend that you knew this already. How many of you have even heard of the Rogation Days? One, two. And a few, Christine and I had talked about it earlier. You know them already.
But I didn't
count. I know. Rogation Days. The Rogation Days are Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of this week, the 3 days before Ascension Day. And sometimes this Sunday kind of gets tacked on as Rogation Sunday as well. This is not a major observance in the church calendar. It's more of a historical curiosity, really. But one that has something interesting, I think, perhaps, to teach us. The Rogation Days are one of those pagan holidays that Christians back in the late Middle Ages appropriated and took over and Christianized. The Rogation Days were originally a pagan agricultural holiday, meant to seek the gods' blessings on the planting of the crops, the beginning of the growing season. When the Christians took over that pagan holiday, it was a time for processions. It had always been a time for processing through the grounds. But they Christianized those processions to become processions that honored saints rather than the pagan gods of the harvest. The Christian celebration of the Rogation Days included prayers also for the crops, Christian prayers for the crops. And I've just recently learned that as this celebration has evolved over the years, it also came to commemorate fishing. So I'm thinking, we ought to do something with the Rogation Days. Next year, maybe have a blessing of the drift boats or something. It's always been a fall and the spring. It's not always going to be exactly at the same time of the year because it is tied to Easter. So it comes a little early this year, the Rogation Days, both for planting and for fishing. There's another custom that has come to be associated with the Rogation Days, particularly in England, going back at least to Anglo-Saxon times, a tradition called the beating of the bell. The beating of the bounds. Bounds is a shorthand name for boundaries. So the beating of the bounds was a formal procession around the parish boundaries, around the geographic boundaries of the parish. Described this way. In former times when maps were rare, it was usual to make a formal perambulation of the parish boundaries during Rogation Week. Knowledge of the limits, the geographic limits of each parish, needed to be handed down from generation to generation, so that such matters as liability to contribute to the repair of the parish church and the right to be buried within the parish churchyard were not disputed. The priest of the parish with the church wardens and the parish officials, headed a crowd of boys who, armed with green boughs, usually birch or willow, beat the parish boundary markers with them as they marched around. Mark the boundaries of the parish. And the beating of the bounds continued the religious aspect of the Rogation Days, where the accompanying clergy prayed for the divine blessing upon the parish lands for the ensuing growing season and harvest. Although modern surveying techniques make the ceremony obsolete, at least for a secular purpose, many English parish churches continue to carry out a regular beating of the bounds as a way of strengthening the parish community and giving it a sense of place. This beating of the bounds is contingent upon the parish being a geographic entity, and that membership or belonging in the parish depended upon where you lived, depended upon whether or not you lived within the geographic bounds of the parish. Those who dwelt within the geographic bounds of the parish were members of the parish and belonged. They had a sense of place, a sense of belonging, a sense of responsibility for that particular parish, which was theirs by virtue of where they lived. These days, certainly for Episcopalians at least, these days, geography does not equate with parish membership. It does, to some degree, still in other faith traditions, and it did in this country in the earliest days of the British settlement in this country. But in general, these days, in the U.S., parish membership is not defined by where you live geographically. That is not what makes you a member, what invites you to belonging in a parish community. If we're clear that the geographic boundaries of the parish are not what constitute belonging or membership anymore, are we clear on what does constitute membership? Are we clear on what it is we are invited to belong to? What is it that we belong to? We have a wonderful opening into that question in the Gospel of John and in the letters of John, in the Johannine literature that we've been hearing throughout this Easter season and continue to hear again today. The Gospel reading from John's Gospel, and also the first letter of John. As I mentioned last week, one of the favorite words for the evangelist who wrote John's Gospel is abide. Over and over and over again, the evangelist, the author of John's Gospel, uses that word abide. Jesus uses that word over and over again in John's Gospel. And I'm not by any means a Greek scholar, but it's my understanding that the Greek word that has come to be translated for us as abide doesn't really have an exact equivalent in English. It is a richer, deeper word. It means abide. It means reside. It means to be at rest, to belong in a place, abide. And remember, when we think about John's Gospel, the Gospel of John, it was written considerably later than the other three and is not necessarily a reliable source for what Jesus may have actually said. And yet it is a wonderful witness to what the first generations of Christians experienced. Those early followers of Jesus who lived and gathered and prayed together in the generations after
Jesus' death.
And part of what they experienced, those first Christians, was abiding in Jesus, dwelling, residing, resting, being at home in the mystical presence of Jesus. So one way that we can think now about residing in a parish, belonging in a parish, is to be a community that resides, that abides in Jesus and in Jesus' love. A group of individuals and a community together that belongs, that finds home, that abides in the presence and love of Jesus. And certainly for me at least, that image, that awareness, that reality is one of the greatest gifts of John's Gospel. The opening up of that experience, the offering and the invitation of that experience and that understanding that comes from the Gospel of John. And when I think, personally, at least for me, when I think about what it means to abide in Jesus, to find a home in Jesus, in the midst of this life, in the midst of this mortal life, this mortal journey that we are all on. When I think about what that means for me, I'm reminded of what is probably my favorite hymn of all hymns. I have a lot of favorites, but my probable top favorite of all of the hymns in our hymnal. The variation or the version that I know and love best includes music by Thomas Tallis. I like Tallis so much I named my dog after him. It's wonderful music, but it's the words that I want to share with you today. And these are not the words that Tallis originally set to the tune, but they are very powerful words, for me at least, and I hope that you will find them powerful and engaging as well. Thinking about that invitation to abide in the love of Jesus. I heard the voice of Jesus say, "Come unto me and rest. And in your weariness, lay down your head upon my breast." I came to Jesus as I was, so weary, worn, and sad. I found in him a resting place, and he has made me glad. I heard the voice of Jesus say, "Behold, I freely give the living water. Thirsty one, stoop down and drink and live." I came to Jesus and I drank of that life-giving stream. My thirst was quenched, my soul revived, and now I live in him. I heard the voice of Jesus say, "I am this dark world's light. Look unto me. Your morn shall rise, and all your day be bright." I looked to Jesus, and I found in him my star, my sun. And in that light of life I'll walk till pilgrim days are done. The voice of Jesus invites us to abide in him, to abide in his love, to share with him our souls, our hopes, our fears, and to find in him, to find in that sharing, to find in that abiding light, refreshment, rest, life, and he has made me glad, the hymn says. It is an invitation. An invitation to find our hope in Jesus, to belong, to abide, to dwell within the life and the love of Jesus. It's no longer a geographic boundary that offers us belonging. It's not dwelling in a particular place that offers us a place in the parish. It is abiding in Jesus' love that offers us life, light, refreshment, and hope.